And with that, I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Michelle. Please come on down. Thank you for being here.
Good evening, everybody. Michelle Alcoholic. Can you hear me in the back? I don't want to get up too close to that thing. Happy birthday. 1 year, 3 9-years. Wow. The 1 year's like, yeah, we have a speaker. Like, a 1 year's a big freaking deal. Like, I could sit here and listen to birthdays all night, right? So my sobriety date is January 15th of 1990. And I'm surprised there weren't more people here getting like 30 days or 1 day or new. So if you're under 1 year of sobriety, you're kind of new. And I'm glad you're here. I have a sponsor that has a sponsor. I got a sponsor at 8 Days of Sobriety. I've always had one. I didn't necessarily always use them. And what happens when I don't use them is I do funky things like that I don't want to talk about off the podium. So I'm going to time myself. So, and my home group is Women's Attitude of Gratitude. And I'd like to thank my sponsees that are here tonight and Bill's surf buddies and their partners and people that I know from AA. And, you know, I'm sitting here with people I've sponsored for over 19 years, you know, 17 years. And man, life is good in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to qualify for my seat here, but I got to tell you, I've been sober 4 times longer than I drank. And so I got messed up quick. You know, it's just like it was when I did a talk one time that I figured out from my first drink in the first year is when I lied to my parents for the first time. I skipped school. I got kicked out of school. I got fired from a job for calling in sick. And I was sick. I hadn't learned that you can't start drinking at 9 a.m. and go to work that night. Like, I was sick, but I didn't understand that I wouldn't be sober later when I drank all day. I picked up my first husband in a bar, and my last ever husband, I picked up in AA. So I like him drunk, but I like him better sober. And I love you, baby. And congratulations to the 9 years. It is awesome to be sober with another, worker, somebody that works the program in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being in sobriety with you, baby. And prior to that, you know, I was suicidal at 10. I was suicidal at 13. I suspect that's not normal. I think it's always really important to tell you that I came from a very, very dysfunctional family. My mother's bipolar and borderline and was often put in the hospital for depression. She had shock treatments at one time. There's a lot of fighting in my home. I was sexually abused for a long time by my cousin and my grandfather. And I say that because not one of those things made me alcoholic. Not one. None of them made me alcoholic. But boy, was I glad when I found alcohol. Boy, was I glad when I found drugs. Like, before I took my first drink, life was kind of black and white. I have a lot of blank spots in my memory, which is very common. But after I got drunk the first time, my life turned to technicolor. Like, that was the thing I needed to put between me and you. I didn't want you too close to me. Thank you very much. You can be over there. And alcohol and drugs did that for me. You know, it just turned the volume down. It made it softer to be in the world. And I am convinced that I would not be alive today had I not found alcohol and drugs. Because it did for me what nothing else had, and it kept me alive long enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, hi, Jonathan. Jonathan, I shamed into coming. Thank you for coming. He's like, I've heard you twice. It could be different. I could be a small Asian lady. You don't know. I could have a whole new story. But it kept me alive long enough to get here. because I was suicidal at 10 and 13, and I probably could have done it with all the drugs in my mom's cupboard, but at that point, I like scared myself, and I became a runner. I ran away from home a couple of times. The first time, I'd never picked up a drink or a drug. I was not well-liked. I'm not really a nice person. You put a little alcohol and drugs in me, I'm much kinder. I'm a friendlier person. You know, I'm easier to get along with. I don't point out how you're the problem so much. You know, like, if you would just straighten up and fly right, I'd be happy. And if I'm happy, you're going to be happy because I make sure you know I'm unhappy. Like, that's how I roll. And so when I came back the second time, because I ended up in a group home the second time as well after I ran away from home, the guy even told me, like, the guy that ran the house, he goes, wow, you get along way better with everybody. And I'm like, yeah, because I finally have some ease and comfort, you know, which I didn't know that's what I had till I read the big book. But yeah, you know, that sense of ease and comfort that, you know, it says we like, the effect produced by alcohol. The truth is I will die for the effect produced by alcohol. If it did what it did and it kept doing it, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't need to be here. Because I would still be, you know, enjoying, or I'd be dead. Whoever said, you know, that's, you know, jails, institutions, and death. That's pretty much what we have. So I only made it out there 8 years, and I would love to tell you that it was my, I didn't know I was an alcoholic, number one. I knew he was an alcoholic. I had diagnosed that quickly after I picked him up in a bar, and you know, pretty shortly after that, I started telling him he couldn't have anything but one beer at a time. And, you know, now that I know what I know about alcoholism, I'm like, well, how rude is that? You can have one beer. I became the beer cop. Oh, you already had part of a beer at that bar. You're not having another one. So I always was eyes out on you. You were the problem. If you had my family, if you had my job, if you had my him, you would drink too. You would use drugs too. I was a periodic drinker, which means periodically I got drunk. I probably about at 18, I had my first drink when I was almost 17. And then by the age of 18, I was getting really sick. Every time I drank, I got sick. I tried every imaginable form of not getting sick. I tried different alcohol. I tried mixers. I tried not eating before. I tried eating before. I tried Tagamet, which was an ulcer medicine, because I had an ulcer, I was pretty sure. And I always got sick. So I periodically drank. But I always thought about drinking. I thought, well, maybe I'm not. I mean, I don't drink like some of you drink, right? Some of you drink every day. Mm-mm. But I thought about it every day. I have that thinking. And I was on the marijuana maintenance program. So if you're thinking that's a good idea, yeah, that's not sober. So I would decide I wasn't going to drink it. I'd go 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and then I would drink again, and I would get that excitement in me that, you know, I get to have a drink, and I would forget the vomiting and the messiness and why I was never going to drink again. And I remember putting my makeup on, going to go dance at the bar. It's going to be great. And then I'm vomiting in the car. It's so interesting to me that my response to that is, I think we need to go now. Like, it's not, ew, that's disgusting. It's like, ew, I think we need to go now. Can you go get my shoes that are in the bar? Like, you know, normal drinkers don't do that, I suspect. Not that there are a lot of you in here, you know. Not that I roll with a lot of them. But, and that was certainly, you know, he would drink to the point that he wouldn't be in the conversation anymore. He would just arrive occasionally, and he was having a talk within himself about something, and it was so embarrassing for me, because at least I was there, you know, and he didn't appear to be. So I could just point at him and point at him and point at him. And so I got sober to get rid of him, you know? That I hadn't had success drinking most of the time I drank, but I always drank to get drunk. I never had a little wine with dinner, was not interested in that. I never liked the taste of alcohol. I don't eat things I don't like the taste of. I don't drink things I don't like the taste of, but I drank alcohol. I drank it fast as I could because I didn't like the taste. But I wanted that effect. That effect I will die for if it's working. And, you know, it just got crazy. Christmas of 1989. That was when I was skipping along the bottom. He was doing non-Michelle approved meth. I had no idea. I just knew something was weird. He's doing a drug deal on the phone at Christmas Day. I'm like very, like, I had no control over him anymore. And I just felt crazier and crazier and crazier. And my solution that I love you, that your best thinking got you here, bless your heart. My best thinking got to my doctor to get more drugs, to help with everything. You know, if I can just add another chemical, I can like smooth out and I'll be fine. And so that's what I did, is I went to the doctor and demanded to see somebody. So self-centered and so privileged, because my mom was a nurse there for a number of years. And so I saw Reg, that's not his last name, but Reg asked me what was going on, and I told him everything he was doing. He's doing this, 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 and this. And he said, I think he's probably using. I'm like, yeah. And then he said, well, what about you, Michelle? I smoke a joint a day, maybe, you know. And he said, well, I think you need to go to Al-Anon, 6 meetings, no expectations. Yeah, girl. And you need to go to this chemical dependency counselor to help you with him. And I think that was just so smart of him, because if he'd have said I was the problem at any point, I would have said, forget about it. You don't know. You didn't listen to me. I mean, how many times we do that to our sponsor? Like, I just explained the whole thing to you and you're saying what? Do I need to repeat it again? Because you're not realizing that he did something wrong, you know? And so I did that. I went to an Al-Anon meeting. I collected all their literature. I cried through the whole thing. It's an alcoholic. I went home and I sat on the floor because I don't believe we had furniture. Everything we owned was in the pawn shop, including my wedding ring, because that's what you do to get dinner and more drugs. And I said, God help me, he's an alcoholic. And 2 days later, I saw the chemical dependency counselor, and he said, you know, I told him everything the guy was doing. And he said, well, you might want to get sober if you want to get divorced. Like, well, I've quit smoking dope hundreds of times. Like, I've smoked enough for 10 counties. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure I had my share. And I quit drinking every time I drank. So I was like, well, okay, I'm going to give this a try, you know. He said indefinitely. Indefinitely is like 90 days. In my head, there was a number for indefinitely, 90 days. And it sounded like a really long time. And so I left his place, and it was Sunday, the 14th of January, 1990, that I smoked the rest of what was in the house, and I had that heart beating, and I was paranoid. You see, that hadn't been working for me for a long time. What I had was paranoia. I couldn't do it, and I couldn't not do it. That's powerless. I don't want to, and then there I am doing it. Like, what? Where's my willpower? I had willpower. I lived in Montana. Hell, I drove in, you know, blizzards to get to my dealer's house. I came up with money pawning everything. Like, so I remember that. It was 11:05, the 14th of January, 1990. And I was uncomfortable, and I didn't like how I felt. And the only thing that made the difference between that day and today is that I had this chemical dependency counselor that was relying on me to come back on Tuesday. I don't like to look bad, sober. And so I did. I showed up Tuesday. I had a day and a half. And he said, you know, do you know anybody that goes to AA or another program? And I did. My next door neighbor, I think she was 11, 12-year-old daughter, had committed suicide at the group home that I had been in, actually. And it was when Pat was 6 months sober, and I watched her stay sober. Like, I didn't get that. Like, my mind did not comprehend that your child could die, and there wasn't, like, a clause in AA that was like, well, if your kid dies, you can drink, right? Or if this happens, you can drink. No, that's why I'm part of, whoever said the no matter what club, I'm in the no matter what club. I have one sobriety date. It's only because I did all my relapsing before I knew that's what I was doing. You know what I mean? Like, I relapsed out there not knowing I had alcoholism, not knowing what I was doing was alcoholic, frankly. And I found Pat. And so the no matter what club to me is there's nothing on that list. My sponsor can die, I don't drink. I've had cancer, my husband's had cancer, my dad died, my brother died. I've had a hip replacement, a back surgery. I had stepkids that hated my guts. Some of you that have been with me a long time know that whole story. Like, nobody can hate you like a teenager can hate you. They have an endless supply of energy for I effing hate her. And in that circumstance, my sponsor said, you have to be the sober woman. You're not allowed to talk to them in the manner that they're talking to you. My inner teenager did not like that very well, but she mostly kept her mouth shut. I did like to tell him what to do a lot about parenting, which I'm sure he did not appreciate. Not one iota. But today, 19 years later, 13 years of marriage, those kids talk to me. They say they love me. Had I opened my mouth and done the things that my little alcoholic brain said, that would not be the case. I'm not even sure we'd be married. Those kids would definitely hate my guts. And they don't, because I follow direction. So I found Pat, and Pat took me to a meeting 4 days later. I do not recommend that. And why I say that is I think we have a very small window with newcomers, like that they're desperate. But they might feel better in 24 hours. You know what I mean? They could feel better in 12. We don't know. So you get their butt to a meeting now. You ask me to take you to a meeting, we're going to a meeting. We're in Southern California. There's a meeting now with Zoom all the time. I don't even want to hear about you complaining about Zoom. Thank you. There are people getting sober in Zoom. Just like way back in the olden days, before the big book, or just after the big book, they would mail the book, and people would read the book and get sober. They didn't have a freaking meeting. Like, it works. You know what I mean? If you do it. So anyway, she took me to a meeting 4 days later. I could have gotten a lot of good ideas in 4 days. But I didn't. I was still with him, and he was still a problem. So in Montana, where I got sober, what they do if a newcomer comes in a meeting is they do a first step. They talk about what they were like, what happened, and what they're like today. Kind of like I'm trying to talk about today, but who knows what you're getting. It's a crapshoot, you know. I'm not a circuit speaker, let's face it. And they all did that. And the reason you do that is so somebody can identify, like, oh, I'm like that. Oh, you drank periodically? I drank periodically. Oh, you smoked a little dope? Oh, I did that. You know, because I need to be like you. If I'm not like you, I don't need to be here. Why? Why would I do that? Why? 1, 2, 3, okay, but 4 on? Come on. Like, have you read those? Have you tried to do those? Like, no sane person goes, yeah, I'd like to do a moral inventory. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I don't have character defects, but, well, I'll try to find some. You know, so they did that. And I heard my first sponsor there at that meeting, and I got her, like, a few days later as a sponsor, but there was laughter in that meeting, and they were not feeling the way I was feeling. They were not living the way I was living. I could see that. I could see that, and, you know, when you're new, nothing's funny. You know what I mean? We don't come here on a winning streak. We don't come here because life is great and I just want to hang out with my peeps. No. I'm in emotional turmoil, I feel. I mean, if you'd have told me to stack BBs naked on my nose in the street and that would make that feeling go away, I'd have tried. I would have tried because that's how bad I felt. You know, I wasn't convinced. I didn't know I was alcoholic, actually, until I started to read the book. I would go to meetings and say I was an addict. And I only identify as an alcoholic because I don't think my disease really cares. You know what I mean? I have alcoholism. I want things that get me out of self, you know? And I get to do that today through sponsorship and, you know, being in a marriage that we're both sober and going to meetings. So I get to do that. It's a little, the process has longer lasting results. It gives me that sense of ease and comfort in the long term that alcohol did for me in the beginning. So I got my sponsor and we started going through the steps. My book, has been used for a long time. It's in its own little binder. But I want to talk about some things that are really important to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. That when people act like it's a mystery how they stay sober, I get a little offended. And I'm going to tell you why. Because this is our textbook, okay? It tells me right away, if you read the thing in the Roman numerals, that 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to show other alcoholics, in italics it says, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. It's going to give me precise. We want brain surgeons to be precise, right? We like launching ships to be precise. Precise is a precise word, right? It doesn't say, you know, we're going to have 100 men and women that are going to spitball it for you. We're going to kind of show you. No, precisely. The directions are in here. I just happen to need the decoder ring of a sponsor. You know what I mean? I couldn't see those. I, first off, wouldn't have read the Roman numerals. You know what I mean? If left to my own devices, why the hell would I do that? They're Roman numerals. That's not important shit. Come on. So then later on it says, you know, that it is the purpose of this book. It talks about the book again, to answer such questions specifically. Specific is a pretty specific word, right? It's kind of precise. You know, it's and then the bad news is that I heard right away is on the bottom of 19, it says, this whole thing was to make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help their needs. I wasn't ready for that at page 20, people. I was still trying to get rid of him by that time. You know what I mean? Like, what? You want me to what? So, and then at the end of that chapter, it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. Clear-cut. Precise. Specific. Clear-cut. That's a big deal. Am I right or am I right? Raise your hand. People that say they don't need the book, God bless them. I don't know how they're staying sober, and I don't know if I want what they have, and I don't know how nice they are. It's nothing quite like one of us who's not drinking and not doing anything else. So I think that's really important. And I think going through the book with somebody that has been through the book is really important because... I mean, I wouldn't have seen the directions for the fourth step. I wouldn't have understood when it says, place them before us in black and white. They meant take a pen and write it down, right? Before us in black and white. So I'm going to try to breeze through the steps really fast for you. Hopefully you know by now I'm an alcoholic, so I don't have to explain any more of that. I never got a DUI. I never had kids. I never lost anything that I didn't pawn. I didn't have a house, you know, I did hobble along. That guy did get sober. I took him to treatment, 8 days sober, the day I got my sponsor. And he's had periods of sobriety. When we divorced, he was not sober. And I was 6 years sober. And the grace there was I was 6 years without a drink or a drug, and I did not have to put him or her in the hospital. Like, that's what I'd always, I'm going to kill you. You ever do that? I'm going to kill you. I had to make amends for that before we ever split up, but I decided that wasn't very nice. You know, it wasn't very nice to threaten to kill somebody. But that's not what I thought of. I called my sponsor. I went to a meeting. I did my service position. Even if I couldn't think right, I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother dies, I'm in a meeting. I'm calling my sponsor. I'm meeting with my sponsees. Because you gave me the template to survive out there in here. I know what we're going to do here. We're going to read how it works. We're going to read the traditions. People are going to talk about treating alcoholism, hopefully. You know, and you're going to understand. You know, like you talked about losing your dad. Yeah, we've all done whatever it was or been through whatever it was. We don't go through things alone. You know, both when my husband had cancer and when I had cancer, women and men in Alcoholics Anonymous surrounded us. They just showed up and brought us food. And, you know, I know Jonathan would come over and visit Bill, and Bill couldn't really talk, you know, but we show up for each other. That's what we do because that's how we take care of each other. You know what I mean? It's this is my family. This is my church. I'm going to read you a little ditty from The Members I View that I just love. It says, I am personally convinced that the basic search of every human being from cradle to grave is to find at least one human being before whom they can stand completely naked, stripped of all pretense or defense, and trust that person not to hurt him, because that other person has stripped himself naked too. This is a lifelong search. This lifelong search can begin to end with the first encounter in AA. I've just spent the last several Saturdays listening to a fifth step, and that's what we do for each other. You know what I mean? Like, I have never had anything that I've told a sponsee come back to harm me in Alcoholics Anonymous. My first sponsor gave me your sex inventory. I said, don't let anybody else see it, but here, you know, because I was having a hard time. And so that's what I've been able to do, is be naked in front of, you know, metaphorically, in front of people I work with and my sponsor with me, that we don't hurt each other here. So step one is, I'm powerless over alcohol and my life's unmanageable. Like I said, I can't do it and I can't not do it. But the big thing is, bless you, my ideas don't work. You know, in the book it says, my ideas don't work, but the God idea does. I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. They have periods after that. I had to quit playing God, period. They're pretty precise about that, too. And so steps one and two for me is, I can't and God can. And so if I don't believe that my ideas have stopped working and I don't believe God can restore me to sanity, I don't need any of the other steps. Why would I? I'm still running the show. I'm fine. Thank you. I've got another new idea. My sponsor that I have today would call me the new idea girl. I've been an Avon lady, a truck driver, a teacher. You know, I've been all these different professions, because this one's going to be, I could pass tests like crazy. I had a real estate license, a teaching traffic school license, a massage therapist license. I like licenses. I like proof. I like proof that I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. You know, really good at that. Even though, when I got my first associates way back when I was not sober, if we were relying upon our lives right now for me to, like, get us out of here based on that information, I hope you have your affairs in order, because I don't remember. I did that out of my mind. And I got straight A's. That's the other thing, is I function well, not sober. That's also a sign of an alcoholic. So if I don't have steps one and two, then I'm powerless, my life's unmanageable by me, my ideas, and I believe that God can restore me to some sort of sanity, why would I turn my will and my life over if I don't believe those two things? And there's nowhere in the big book that talks about getting stuck on the third step. Anywhere, right? Am I right or am I right? Right? It says, we do the third step prayer, and then we vigorously commence the fourth step directions. But before that, page 63, some of my favorite, actually, talks about how I am the director. I want my way. I'm either nice or I'm not very nice. We have words for that. And I'm trying to get my way. And so, you know, I'm the director that's always trying to arrange the show. I'm selfish, self-centered. You know, I'm harmed because I step on your toes and then you harm me. And I'm like, what? So 60 through 63 is an apt description of what I'm like with untreated alcoholism, even in sobriety. Right? I can get afraid that I'm not going to get what I want, and I can get all. So we vigorously commence the fourth step. If you're stuck on the third step, you have not admitted the first two steps or truths. Just saying. If you don't like that, don't ask me to sponsor you. So the fourth step, it gives me clear-cut directions. You know, we put this on paper. We look at resentments. It's the number one offender. People go out on resentment. Resentments at us in AA, they're assholes. Well, do you know how they ran that meeting? Did you know Susie did such and such with the coffee? And oh my God, I can't believe it. Whoa. You know, we're gossips in here. And so the book says, write all that down. Who is it? Susie. Susie did. She asked my husband to dance and she looked at him like he was cute. You know, that was my first four step. She danced with him because we were the dance committee. You know, what did it affect? Was it my pride, my personal relationships, my pocketbook, my sex relationship? you know, my pride. What was it? Write that all down. So I was thrilled because I thought that was the only part of the fourth step. I was writing all my resentments. Yeah. We will definitely get some sympathy here. I was right. They were all to blame. And then it was like, oh, there's this other part called my part. And that is the magic of the fourth step. The magic is I have always been stuck at the world and its people are always quite wrong. The world and its people screw me. This says, hey, like, look over here, Michelle. What have you done? Where have you been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Where have you possibly caused harm? And it has to tell me, putting out of my mind what you've done, we resolutely turn our thoughts to what we have done. And I had just muddled around in resentment my whole life. And until I knew that I had a part, because I really didn't want to have a part, I didn't have that freedom of when I get a resentment today, I get a look at, or am I being selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, friend? Oh, you know, with Bill's kids, oftentimes I would get upset because they were getting more than I was. I was really, and they, frankly, they had a way nicer childhood than I ever did. So then that little inner me was like, they're so self-centered and they don't get it. They're so, got it so good. And I would look at that. It's like, if these were your children, wouldn't you want them to have all these wonderful things? Yeah, right? So I had to, like, go through all that. I had to have a sponsor. So, and then it asks us to look at our fears. What are you afraid of? I'm afraid of everything. Opposites, being rich, being poor, being fat, being thin, being smart, being stupid. You know, I'm afraid of lots of things, and spiders, and dying in a car wreck with fire involved. You know, and you write them all down. Why do I have them? And then you do a sex inventory, and we never talk about sex in here like we don't have problems. They wrote a whole page and a half on that shit. Just saying. And, you know, again, where was I selfish? It's not, where did I arouse jealousy? I wrote all that down. And that's where I kind of got stuck because I had all the early childhood stuff. And I was able to work through that. So I did all that. And then I did a fifth step. And I really wanted to do with a priest that I did not know. And I didn't do that. I did it with my sponsor. That was the first time somebody cried and said, what happened to you as a child was not okay. The big people are supposed to take care of the little people. And she cried, and I'd never seen her cry. She cried then, and she cried when her dad died. And I went home from my fifth step, and I, you know, did the little directions, and I felt like I had, like, climbed a mountain and come back. I did not have no pink clouds for me, no treatment center for me. There was not a pink cloud in sight. No, ma'am. So it gives us opportunities, if ever you do a fifth step with somebody, it asks us, you know, sit quietly, but then it also says, carefully reading the five proposals, we ask, if we omitted anything? We're building this arch to wish we should pass. Is our work solid? Two. Are the stones in place? Three. Have we skimped on the cement put in the foundation? And five, have we tried to make mortar without sand? I ask those questions before I'm done with the fifth step, just in case there's any secrets. Just in case there might be. And then six and seven are ongoing character defects. What am I getting out of it? What would I have to give up if I stopped? If I'm doing it, I'm probably getting something out of it. You know, whatever it is, you know, bad mouthing the lady at work or look, you know, trying to feel superior. I had to make amends to everybody. The job, my first job that I had when I got sober, I had to make amends to everybody. I'm lucky I didn't get fired. I mean, really, my sponsor's like, well, I'm glad you did that before you got fired. And I'm so arrogant. I thought, what do you mean? You know, I totally, like, got in my boss's face, and the next day came in and apologized. He said, well, I'm really glad you did that, because I was going to write you up, and I was shocked. You're going to write me up? What? You know, I just thought I could run roughshod over everybody, and that you would put up with it, you know? You know, eight, my list was made, it tells me in the book, my list was made when I did my fourth step. When I listen to a fifth step, I write down every single name I hear, even if it's Fred from the grocery store. He might be pertinent in your night step. I write it all down, and I give it to you, and you, like, put those in order. And, you know, other people might come up. So I already have that, and then I have to get willing. And the ninth step is more magic because, you know, some people just get in that washing machine of one through five, because they don't want to do nine, because then I got to go eyeball to eyeball with you. I have to really tell you I was wrong. You know, that's not very fun. One of the first amends I made was to a lady who danced with my husband. who I was sure was trying to snag him. And I was not nice to her. And I was, you know, I badmouthed her around the other ladies. And I had to make amends to her. And I was making amends to her. And she kept saying, yeah, you're right, you did do that. And I just kept nodding my head and saying, I was wrong. I was wrong to do that. I deeply regret that. And I did not argue with her. I gratefully did not break down and cry. But I just kept nodding my head and said, you're right, I was wrong to do that. But she was like, yeah, and you did this and that. And so don't assume because you're making an amends to somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's going to go well. Or they're going to be your friend. And that's not why we make amends. We make amends so you don't have to drink or use. That's the beginning of all my amends. I'm part of a spiritual program, and I make amends to ensure I never have to drink or use again. That's why I do it. And I don't always want to be friends with whoever I'm making amends to. And that lady, for 3 years, I was part of the dance committee. I'd smile at her. I'd sell her a ticket. And she, all the time, did not like me. No, no, no. 3 years later, she said something to me, to the effect of, you're different now. But that didn't matter. It doesn't matter. They don't have to like me. I just have to clean my side of the street. 10, 11, and 12, we learned in the four-step how to take a spot check inventory. 10 is a spot check inventory. It makes me crazy when people say it's the nightly review. It's not. That's the 11th step. The 10th step is in the moment. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, or frightened? Do I own amends? Do I need to call my sponsor right now? Do I need to make amends right now? They say immediately, that's up for discussion sometimes, you know, maybe next week, maybe in a year, maybe tomorrow. But the longer I've stayed sober, the more readily I'm willing to do it, like right away, because I don't like feeling like shit. I got into it, well, I didn't get into it. I was not nice to a nurse because she wasn't doing it the way I thought she should. And I had to make amends to her. Like right then, I could not go home from that doctor's appointment and not apologize to her. And then the next time I had to see her, I got on the scale. I don't like doing that. I gave her my list of medications. It's on the freaking computer behind you, but I'm gonna give you the list. And I'm not gonna do anything that's gonna make me make amends to you right now. So 10 is in the moment, you know, and I love, my first sponsor pointed out, it says, you know, we commence this way of living, and when these crop up, not if, when these crop up, we're not going to be perfect. We have this design for living for design for living. It doesn't say, oh, you've been a saint now. You just go forth and teach the people. Doesn't say that. It says, oh, you're going to be resentful, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. Okay. And then it talks about, at this point, that obsession has been relieved. It has been put in a position of neutrality. I don't think about drinking. If you're fairly new and you're still waking up thinking about drinking, it goes away. It's hard to impart that on somebody that's new. I wish newcomers could like somehow feel what it feels like to be in the gut of somebody that's been around for a while that's living sobriety and having fellowship and doing the deal, because that's not what I felt when I got here. And we want the results before we do the work. I want the personal trainer, does all the work, sends me the results. I'm thin and muscular, and I don't do the work. And that's what people want in AA. They want me to describe to them, you're going to stay sober. Now, I don't know if you're going to still be married, but you're going to stay sober, and you'll be shown the truth. Like, that's what I know to be true. And step 11 is this relationship we build with God through prayer and meditation. And I have a wonderful example. My husband is like, I see him pray on his knees every morning. He does meditation. I'm not like that. I'm not quite as strict as he is with that stuff. I'm not great at meditation. But I do have an ongoing conversation with my higher power. Like, I'm real clear that the only guaranteed traveler with me till the rest of my life is God and me. I want y'all to be here. I want to actually take my last breath before Bill does. Because that's how self-centered I am. I don't want to suffer that pain. But baby, you can do it. But I know that that's my primary relationship, is me and God. And so when I start putting you above God, and you start doing wonky things that I don't think are good, or aren't AA approved by Michelle, and I start to get unhappy again, then it goes back to, The best possible source of emotional support is God. End of story. And, you know, I've gotten to do that through working with women. I've gotten to do that watching and taking care of my husband and him taking care of me. And vulnerability was the last thing on the planet I ever wanted to be ever in my life, because when I was vulnerable, bad things happened to me as a kid. And I've learned how to be vulnerable with you. I've learned how to tell the truth. I've learned how to, you know, people think I'm tough. You know, if you talk to some of the women I sponsor, I'm not that tough. You know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of a schmaltz. Which brings us to step 12. Look at that. Almost done. Whoever said be landed on time. I would not be sober today without the women I work with. I just wouldn't. When my first husband left and was cheating with another woman, I think I was sponsoring six women, and they showed up in my home. And we were going through the book, and I was in a meeting that night when I found out he was cheating on me. And all I remember from the speaker, it was a speaker meeting on a Saturday night, is the guy saying, and we got together like a praying mantis. And I think the praying mantis eats their meat or something. But I identified as like, they just like clung to each other. It was sick. And so, you know, when I haven't wanted to show up for myself, because, you know, it hasn't been all hearts and flowers. There we go. I'm really clear that alcohol and drugs don't work for me. So my options are work the spiritual program of action or die. Like, really, that's the way it is for me. And, well, I can't die because I know AA works. I can't do that to the women I sponsor and the people like Jonathan who know me. And I just look bad and make AA look bad, frankly. And I don't want to do that, right? Like, you wouldn't think AA looked bad. You'd be like, oh, that's poor Michelle. But the truth is, I show up for you when I can't show up for myself. You know, I just had back surgery the 12th of September. And I got two new sponsees. Every time I get an influx of new sponsees, my dad dies. My ex-mother-in-law, who was like a mom to me, dies. Oh, he ends up with cancer. Like, I'm always suspicious when I start getting new sponsees, something's going down. But this time I was having surgery, and it's like forces me to get out of self. That's the name of the game, is if I'm a closed circuit in Michelle's head, it's not any fun. And if I'm out working with women and going to meetings and being of service, then I have the joy of being a sober alcoholic. Thank you all for being here. I know you showed up for the food and friendship, and they just threw me into the mix, but it's been a pleasure. Thank you.